There's a line drive to left, and that's going to be down. And the Royals have their third double in the inning. Alberto drives in Dozier, and the Royals lead 5-0 in the fourth.
Great win. Jake was fantastic again. That was a great carryover from his last start. And then the offensive gave him some breathing room. But some really good at-bats and just kind of one of those days where you just build on it. A lot of doubles, a couple big hits. But, you know, it just made us realize again how quick it can slip away from you if you're not careful. And that's a good offense over there. And the guys did a nice job in the bullpen. It was kind of stopping the bleeding with Zim. I thought Scotty did a fantastic job. But overall, one of those offensive nights that we needed to see. But Jake set the tone right from the first pitch of really being aggressive again and attacking the strike zone.
Royals win again. Royals are 7-4 in sole possession of first place. Mike Matheny on the win as Royals hold on to beat the Blue Jays 7-5. Led 7-0. And Hanser Alberto, RBI double, one of four doubles in the inning for the Royals last night in the fourth as the Royals led 5-0 after that hit. And Jacob Junis did a nice job on the hill. He's been really probably the best starter for the Royals so far this year, and he's number five starter. Him and Duffy have been pretty good. Junis last night gets the win, 5 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 6 Ks. And Scott Barlow survives a bit of a scare there in the ninth, goes 2 innings for his first save of the season. Jorge Soler with a couple of hits, Hunter Dozier a couple of hits. He's been struggling. Alberto with a couple of hits. Playing third, Dozier played right field. Nicky Lopez, 2 runs scored, 1 for 2 with an RBI. As the Royals get it done last night, 7-5, led 7-0. Blue Jays 4-6, 1-7. Royals now 7-4. Blue Jays fall to 6-7, and the Royals will be back in action again tonight. Maybe it doesn't look good. The weather forecast. I would guess that they won't play tonight. 7-10 first pitch. It'll be Mike Minor on the hill, who has an undefeated record in his career against the Blue Jays, so that bodes well. He's on the hill, 1-0 with an ERA of 4.50. against the Toronto Blue Jays in the second game of that series. And coming up on Saturday, Brady Singer will be on the hill against the Blue Jays. And then on Sunday, Danny Duffy, 2-0 with ERA under 1, will finish up the four-game set against Toronto. Who knows, might have a doubleheader. And by the way, doubleheaders are just 7 innings long each game. That rule was carried over from a year ago, along with the runner at second to start the 10th inning. And you look at the baseball standings right now for the Royals. They are in first place alone at 7-4, half-game lead over the Cleveland Indians. The other three teams, the White Sox, the Tigers, and the Twins, all one game under 500 at 6-7. Best record in baseball belongs to defending World Series champion Dodgers, who are 11-2, and it's only the Royals and Dodgers that have avoided not losing a series so far this year. Every other team has lost a series. The Red Sox 9-game winning streak came to an end last night as they fall. But they have the best record in American League with a record of 9-4. So the Royals off to a good start. Hopefully they'll be leading a division when the season concludes. That would be quite a story. And yet for some Royals fans, still can't watch the games. That's got to be the infuriating thing.
Yes.
So you try to follow it the best you can, or you got to pony up or change your provider or whatever the case may be. If you're on Hulu or Sling or YouTube TV or Dish, you are not able to get Royals baseball, at least not yet. And it doesn't really sound like there's anything imminent on an agreement with any of those entities. So we'll continue to follow that. For those of you that have cable providers and also DirecTV, AT&T, you are good to watch the Royals from what we understand. But those others, not so fortunate. All right, local sports, Dusty. We've got results from yesterday, and baseball and softball now know where they're going to go for postseason play.
Yes, softball yesterday, the Beloit Lady Trojans sweeping Sacred Heart there in Solana. In game one, they won 5-4. Beloit scored 2 in the 5th, 3 in the 6th to get out of there with the win. Again, 5-4 the final. Game two goes to Beloit 3-0. Chloe Oldo had a complete game one hit shutout, struck out 13 in the process. So Lady Trojans are now 8-2 overall, 4-0 in the NCAA, while Sacred Heart dropped to 3-5 and 2-4 in league play. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln sweeping Plainville Stockton last night as well, or yesterday afternoon and evening. Game one goes 11-3 to Sylvan Lucas, and the Lady Mustangs winning game two 6-1. So they're now 7-3 on the season with their sweep yesterday. Also, the St. John's Golf Invitational taking place yesterday. there at Beloit Country Club. Team-wise, Lakeside won the title with 371 points in that team championship. Second place went to Osborne, third St. John's. Individually, Kylan Cunningham of Lakeside finished in first place at 79 on the day. That was seven strokes better than Dayton Lance of Osborne, who finished in second with an 86. Grady Walters of Osborne, third. Brandon Beffert finished fourth for the Bulldogs. And a fifth place finish for Cooper Brown of Lakeside. Zach Rose of Tipton was sixth. Taryn Winkle of Lakeside, seventh. Eli Hahn from Lakeside finished eighth. Jared Eitzman of St. John's was ninth. And Reed Walsh of Lakeside, 10th, to round out top 10 area finishers there in the St. John's Golf Invitational. Also, some area athletes are competing at the Shocker Pre-State Challenge track and field meet in Wichita. Got underway yesterday. It'll continue today. Wyatt Eberle of Lakeside finished second in the men's javelin throw 1-3A, a throw of 156-4. J.C. Vath was competing in the women's elite 1,600 and 3,200 runs, which included athletes of all classes. And Vath finished in seventh place in the 1,600 at 5:36.96, and then finished in eighth place in the 3,200, 12:20.04. Wyatt Eberle of Lakeside is scheduled to compete in the men's triple jump elite division today from the area. We did have some events that were scheduled. Actually, for the immediate area, it was just track and field at Hill City, but that track and field invitational has been postponed due to the inclement weather there out west. The Hill City track and field invitational for St. John's, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge will now be on Monday, April 26th. As Wade said, Case has released their postseason assignments for baseball and softball. In the immediate area, both Beloit and Lincoln Sylvan Lucas will be competing in the TMP 3A Baseball Regional. First round will be May 17th, with the semis and finals on May 19th. Other teams competing include Ellsworth, TMP Lacrosse, Hoisington Central Plains, Larned, Minneapolis, and Russell Victoria. Both Beloit and Sylvan Lucas Lincoln softball will be at the 3A Larned Regional. Same dates, May 17th and 19th. And those other teams competing there include Ellsworth, TMP Lacrosse, as well as Hoisington Central Plains, Larned, Plainville, Stockton, and Russell Victoria. So those are the teams that are competing at those baseball and sub-state regionals. And you can find full spring sports postseason assignments at ncksports.com for all of that. So, again, that's where you can find all the latest in local sports. We have our Athlete of the Week and much more right at your fingertips there at ncksports.com. So you can also find the latest as far as baseball and softball scheduled for next week on our live video stream at the Beloit Trojan Channel. So stay tuned for all of that coming up next week. We'll get back into local sports in the area.
All right, as mentioned, the Royals winning yesterday, 7-5 was the final. And so the Royals back in action coming up here this evening, weather permitting. KU head football coaching search. Travis Goff, the athletic director, announcing an email to donors, the plan to conduct a national search for the next KU football coach and looking for a permanent replacement for Les Miles after he met with Emmett Jones, who's the interim coach right now. Whether or not Kansas has a head coach in place going into next season, we shall see. Certainly late in the game for that to take place. Also, some other KU news. Creighton's Christian Bishop, who's a good player from Creighton, he's in the transfer portal. He's narrowed it down to three teams. He'll pick between Texas, North Carolina, and KU coming up tomorrow. That'd be a good get for KU if they could get him. And if Kyle Cuff Jr. is reclassified into the 2021 class. He'll join the Jayhawks for the 2021-2022 season. And Bobby Pettiford's supposed to officially make it official today, point guard from Carolina to come to Kansas. And Joseph Yusefu from Drake already coming to Kansas University. Of course, Bryce Thompson is leaving. That was a big loss for KU. Didn't see it coming, said Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks yesterday. And also Cam Martin, Division II All-American at Missouri Southern, is coming to the program. And Sidney Curry, a 6'8 physical specimen at the community college level, very highly ranked big man, very athletic, is committed to Kansas as well. So the Jayhawks filling up their spots. And we talked about the transfer portal yesterday with Brian Haney. If you missed that whole interview with Brian, you can check it out on our podcast page. Go to kdcountry94.com, click on the podcast tab and the sports ticket tab, and you can listen to sports ticket podcasts and listen to shows you missed in the past or interviews that we've done in the past. And I was asking Brian about how things are different for coaches now, and even more so than ever before, because not only do you recruit a kid once, you got to recruit a kid almost every single year even during the season when your season is going on, to make sure kids don't leave. And it's easier for kids to transfer now. And the latest information coming from the NCAA with new legislation allowing every single player in all sports now, just not certain sports, all sports, including men's basketball and football and women's basketball as well, to have a one-time transfer without sitting out a year. So over the 4 years of college, you can transfer one time and you do not have to sit out. And many conferences have waived the intra-conference transfer rule, which means that if there's a guy that's not happy at KU, he can go to K-State. If there's a woman that's not happy at K-State, let's say Chrissy Carr, if she decides to go to KU, she can. Yeah, it's pretty crazy stuff. And Brian had some thoughts on it yesterday.
It's a sad state of affairs, to be honest. I think a lot of Kansas fans were excited when some of these player commitments started to roll in. And you mentioned Yesupu from Drake. They're watching the highlight reel of his dunk over Wichita State in the NCAA tournament. They're thinking, man, I love this new transfer portal situation. We're going to start plucking guys off left and right. In theory, sure, the rich could get richer, you know, preying on mid-major and smaller schools' best players. But the rich can also get pilfered from, too. And the Bryce Thompson news, I think, took most of us by surprise. To lose a five-star McDonald's All-American, I don't think many saw that one coming. And it shows you not only have to give them your best sales pitch up front, but you almost have to coddle kids and keep your arm around them 24-7, because if the slightest bit of adversity or frustration or whatever sets in, you can just up and transfer and go anywhere. That's got to be frustrating for coaches like Bill Self that are as long tenured as they are. I think coaches are going to have to be less hard on kids, because if they're frustrated with playing time or feel they got yelled at practice or whatever the case might be, they're just going to up and go. But I really think coaches are going to have to reevaluate the type of kids they recruit at the onset, the strength of the commitment they have from that player. Because now in this wild, wild west, as Bill Self is calling it, this brave new world of transfer portal and recruiting, anybody can leave for anybody on any given day.
Your ticket. And that is true. And it is going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out with the transfer portal. And we told you about the notable transfers that are coming to Kansas. Of course, Bryce Thompson, the biggest name that is leaving the University of Kansas. Kansas State, meanwhile, when you look at their situation, they've done fairly well. You have to say they've upgraded with the kids that have left, and then you focus on the kids they're bringing in. They have more experience, more maturity probably, and K-State has three what could be impact transfers. Mark Smith, who played at Missouri, a team that went to the NCAA tournament a year ago, averaged 8 points a game. Marquise Knoll, from Arkansas Little Rock, a very talented player there, although only 5'7". And then, of course, Kansas State picking up another commitment as Ismail Massoud, who had a decent career at Wake Forest, and he's a stretch four. That could open up things for Davian Bradford inside. So you got Nigel Packett, point guard, Davian Bradford at center, and then you got the transfer in Massoud at the four spot. And then you probably got Mark Smith possibly playing the three. Now suddenly you've got an experienced team, and who knows how Knoll fits into the equation. And Kansas State, honestly, after everything looked crazy with guys leaving, and then we find out, you know, KU has multiple guys leaving as well. It's just the nature of the beast now. Don't act like your team's the only one that's affected by defections. It isn't that way anymore. And yes, certainly for some years now, Bruce Weber's lost a lot of kids from his recruiting classes. But if you can find impact transfers, that can fill the void. And K-State does look like they are improved with these three additions. And perhaps there'll be more additions for KU and K-State, as there are still kids out there that are in the transfer portal that are trying to decide what they're going to do, where they're going to go, as I mentioned with Christian Bishop from Creighton. So K-State, I mean, really, when you look at it, I think they improved by the defections, addition by subtraction. Now, if they didn't get anybody, then it would have been a big loss, mm-hmm. but they did pretty well.
Yeah, I can't say that there's anything wrong with what has happened with K-State in the offseason here. I mean, obviously, you were concerned with the number of transfers because it's just not a one offseason issue for Bruce Weber, right? But then actually being able to bring in guys is something that he hasn't necessarily done like he has this offseason, I would say. They're crediting Shane Southwell with a lot of that, too. So bringing these guys in, obviously, with experience is going to help, and that's what you need, because I don't know how you survive if he continued to have records like he's had over the last couple of years. So he's got to get this thing turned around a little quicker, I think, than what most coaches would in this situation. So, yeah, I think he's got guys that have experience at the Division I level, have experience at the Power 5 level, which is, I think, important as well. And they'll know kind of what to expect when they get into a league like the Big 12. And so, yeah, I'm encouraged, I guess. But, again, I'm not going to be overly encouraged until I see the product on the floor and it actually has improved.
Well, with the additions, I mean, Gene Taylor didn't go as far to say they expect to be in the NCAA tournament next year, but he did say basically that they expect to compete to make an NCAA tournament, which, let's be honest, they weren't even close to it this year. So Gene Taylor is saying that they expect a significant improvement next year, and a lot of that's going to depend on Davion Bradford, Nigel Pack, the two freshmen coming back that are the biggest, you know, impact players coming back as freshmen. Micah Girl's back for another year. And then you've got these three transfers. So there's six pretty solid players that Kansas State has to build around. So it will be interesting to see how it all plays out for Kansas State and for KU as well, because KU's bringing guys that are experienced that could help them. They got a stretch four in Cam Martin from Missouri Southern Division II All-American. So it will be very interesting to see how the pieces fit together. Yusefo can play point guard or off guard, a combo guard. And does Harris come off the bench like he did this year as a young point guard? It's just going to be the challenge, of course, for coaches is reload, hopefully, instead of rebuild. And then you look at what Texas has done with Chris Beard, now the new head coach, and the staff he's put together. And I think you could see Baylor, Texas, and Kansas really, really battling it out. And it strengthens the conference. Whether KU, you know, as a KU fan, I wouldn't like what was happening. Because it looks like, well, Baylor won a national championship. Obviously, that's not good for Kansas. Then Texas with Chris Beard, who seems to be the real deal. If he can do what he did at Lubbock, then what can you imagine what he can do with the resources at Texas? And he's putting together a heck of a staff. And he starts bringing in some high-profile recruits or transfers. And the next thing you know, it's Texas, Baylor, and Kansas fighting each year. And then you start to get to where that's like the good old ACC days, where you had North Carolina and Duke and Wake Forest, and then you had Carolina, Duke, and Virginia. I mean, you always had three, if not four, really, really good teams in the ACC. And so people would point out, well, KU has won 14 straight conference titles. Well, Duke and Carolina haven't done that. Yeah, but Kansas never had a Duke or Carolina in their conference. Mm-hmm. Now they might be forming that. Now, the one good thing about Baylor winning the national championship, as Brian Haney pointed out yesterday, is that KU is highly motivated because they could have won it all if not for COVID. They would have been number one overall seed. Maybe they would have. And they're that highly motivated to be like, okay, we got Baylor has our attention. They're not only the Big 12 champion that won it by five games this year, but they won the whole kit and caboodle. So there's extra motivation, players coming in that know that Kansas wants to win a national championship. And so that part could be good. But in regards to a recruiting standpoint, there are going to be things that are going to be used against Kansas. Obviously, the cloud still hanging over the university with the NCAA investigation will be used against them. Also be used against them, I think, is that some of these McDonald Americans have left. Mm-hmm. Quentin Grimes and Bryce Thompson be right off the bat. You know, do you want to go to Kansas where it's extremely stressful? Yeah, there's tradition. We get that. But and fans being hard on you, do you want to come to Baylor and where fans won't be as hard on you? And you can kind of mold into the fabric of what we're trying to build here at Baylor when we reload to try to defend our national championship. And then Texas, there's always going to be the pressure, and there's going to be a lot of social media stuff there because Texas is Texas. So, you know, Baylor's got some very big recruiting points that they can shove to and present to prospective recruits. And so Baylor's in a very good spot right now, no question. All right, the WNBA draft took place last night, and the number one overall pick from the Big 12.
With the first pick in the 2021 WNBA draft, the Dallas Wings select Charlie Collier from the University of Texas.
That's your number one overall pick. Anything you want to add about the WNBA draft, Dusty?
I mean, you can find the whole list at WNBA.com. There wasn't anybody real local that people are going to know in the WNBA, I don't think so. Yeah, just find the whole list at WNBA.com. There are a couple Baylor players picked in the second round of West Virginia, number four, and I don't have those names. Some of them I don't know how to pronounce the right way probably anyway. So,
all right.
But, yeah, there's nobody local that was picked last night.
Former NBA All-Star abruptly retiring Brooklyn Nets center LaMarcus Aldridge. He left to go to the Nets. He announced on Twitter yesterday that he's retiring from the NBA after experiencing an irregular heartbeat during his final appearance with the team. For 15 years, I put basketball first, Aldridge wrote, and now it's time to put my health and family first. Aldridge, who's 35 years of age, said he experienced an irregular heartbeat during the Nets game against the Lakers on Saturday, after which his condition worsened. The next morning, I told the team what was going on. They were great getting me to the hospital. Though I'm better now, what I felt with my heart that night was still one of the scariest things I've ever experienced. LaMarcus Aldridge is stepping away, and he had a chance to win a ring with the Nets. That's part of the reason why he joined the Nets, and it's unfortunate for him. He's been a stand-up guy, a model citizen in the NBA. Of course, had great years with the Trail Blazers, had some solid years with the Spurs, as Dusty's aware of, and then went to the Nets to try to chase a ring. And LaMarcus Aldridge, I mean, tells us how old we are getting, because I remember him playing at college in Texas and was a very good player who had a lot of potential and really turned himself into a perennial NBA All-Star. And unfortunately for him, he's got to step away. But to me, this is a no-brainer. You want to chase a ring? Is a ring more important than your life? No.
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 Not as long as he's been doing this. Like, you know, if it was meant to be, it was meant to be, and it's not. So let's go ahead and survive this whole thing and make sure there's no issues moving forward.
Seems like early in his career he had an issue with his heart, if I remember correctly. There was something that they had to kind of, I don't know if they had to check a little bit or keep an eye on, it seems, but I don't remember exactly. I'm just going off my memory bank. Steph Curry does it again. Last night he scored 33 points, which really is nothing for him. 53 and 42 the two games before. But the key thing to this one is he topped 30 points for a ninth consecutive game. That's a career best for Steph Curry. Golden State pulled away, beat the Cavs last night, which includes K-State's Dean Wade, who plays for the Cavs. He had 3 points on a triple. And the Warriors won 119 to 101. Curry, who made an NBA record 29 three-pointers over the previous three games, is averaging 38 points per game during his torrid run. He missed his first 8 attempts beyond the arc last night, but then hit four of his last 5, had 5 assists. Golden State's won now 4 in a row. Steph Curry, ninth consecutive game of 30-plus there in the NBA. The Lakers and the Celtics, no LeBron James and no Anthony Davis, although Davis might be back soon. And the Lakers lose at home to the Celtics last night. The Celtics playing really good ball now all of a sudden. Jason Tatum's playing a high level. And Jaylen Brown last night erupted for 40 points. Kemba Walker starting to play some good basketball. The Celtics still a team to be reckoned with in the Eastern Conference. Also last night in NBA, the Bucks beat the Hawks 120 to 109. And the Suns beat the Kings 122 to 114 as the Suns continue to fight for that number one seed in the West. And you know, the key number you want to avoid is you want to avoid being the 7th seed, because then you're in this play-in tournament, as they call it, between the 7, 8, 9, 10 seeds. And right now, when you look at that race, you know, the Sixers have one game over the Nets, and we've got what, 17 games to go, because there are only 72 games this year. So that we played about 55 games. The Bucks are in the 3 spot, and that might be good for them, being under the radar a little bit. Everybody's talking about the Sixers and the Nets in the East. The Hawks are the 4 spot, but I just don't think they're quite there yet. Celtics are tied with the Hawks for the 4 spot. Then the Knicks have a half-game lead over the Heat to avoid being in that 7 seed. The Hornets are the 8, the Pacers a 9, and the Bulls are a 10, and they are 10 games under 500. The Raptors looks like they might very well miss the whole thing. And, of course, they've been playing all their games in Tampa, and that certainly couldn't have helped. The Jazz have a one-game lead over the Suns with the number one seed in the West. The Clippers, the 3 seed. The Nuggets, the 4. But Jamal Murray is out with a torn ACL. Horrible blow for the Nuggets. The Lakers are in the 5 spot. The Blazers are in the 6 spot, a game lead over Dallas. Memphis, the 8 spot. Golden State, the 9. San Antonio clinging to the 10 spot by 2 games over the Pelicans. So the Lakers are only 3 games away from being in a play-in tournament. You know they want to avoid that. But like I said, Anthony Davis is supposed to be get back soon, and then they get LeBron, and the Lakers may end up being, you know, with Jamal Murray out, if the Lakers play the Nuggets, they ain't going to freak out about that. Then it'd be Lakers probably against the Jazz or the Suns in the semis, which could be very, very entertaining and interesting. So the West is stacked like usual. Mark Cuban brought up some very good points. You know, Mark Cuban is a guy that's very outspoken, but most of the time he makes a lot of sense. And he's a businessman, and he knows how things work. He pointed out, he thinks that, and he knows that he voted for it. He even admits it. And so did the committee or whoever determined this. But he says this was not the right decision to have the play-in tournament this year. And the reason he said it is, he said, well, first of all, we were coming off a season, and then we had a shortest offseason in the history of the NBA. We played in a bubble. We had a short offseason. We restarted. We agreed to play 10 less games overall. But then we have a play-in for the 7, 8, 9, 10 seeds to battle for the last two spots in the 8-team format. And he said what we should have done is we should have had the 15. How did he say that? That you're supposed to – he was talking about I think he was talking about the 7 seeds would automatically be in, and then you just had one play-in perhaps for the last spot. I can't remember how he worded it. But anyway, the point he made was that every game – you have to play players extra minutes now, and it's more stressful on these guys after the shortest offseason in history to avoid either being in the play-in tournament or to try to get into the play-in tournament. And then you add more games in the play-in tournament after you're trying to shorten the season to start with and the wear and tear on the bodies of these players. And he makes an interesting point. It's just that they didn't have the long-term vision when they decided to do this. And I thought those are interesting points that he made about that, because it does make sense because of that short off season. Let me see here. I'm going to pull up what he had to say here, because he says the play-in tournament plan is an enormous mistake, especially due to this season's compressed schedule. He goes, I get why the NBA is doing it, but if we're going to be creative because of COVID, we should go straight up 1 through 20 and let the bottom four play in. Okay, so that's what he's saying. You got your top 20 teams, and let the bottom four play in, which would be, in essence, what he's trying to say is 1 through 20. He's talking 10 teams in each conference.
East and West,
and then you just go ahead. Yeah, that's saying put all together, seed at 1 through 20, let the bottom four play their way in. He said the worst part of this approach is that it doubles the stress of the compressed schedule. Rather than playing for a playoff spot and being able to rest players as the standings become clear, teams have to approach every game as a playoff game to either get into or stay in the top six, since the consequences, Luka Doncic said, players are playing more games and more minutes in fewer days. But the NBA Board of Governors, which included Mark Cuban, unanimously approved that proposal to implement a play-in tournament for the season after the league used it for the first time before the playoffs in the bubble. In hindsight, Cuban says, we made an enormous mistake. Of course, his team is involved in that. The Mavericks are the 7th seed right now, and they would have to participate in a play-in tournament. Doncic's made a good point. This is why I've not really liked the play-in tournament myself. I know it creates some excitement. I understood it for the bubble. I did, because you had to restart. But I don't really like it overall because of this. Doncic said Monday, I don't understand the idea of a play-in. You play 72 games to get into the playoffs, then maybe you lose 2 in a row and you're out of the playoffs? I don't see the point of that. I really don't either. If you got your spot, you got your spot. If the 8th seed, now I will say this. If there are two teams tied for the 8th seed, instead of going by tiebreakers to determine who's in, go ahead and do what Major League Baseball does. Because that's what Major League Baseball does. You have two teams tied for the final wild card spot, or even a division title, you have an extra 163rd game. That would make sense to me. If there's a 9 and an 8 that are tied for the 8th spot, then, or if you even want to do it, I just go one game, winner take all. And how do you determine who has home court? The team that had the better record head-to-head, and then you go interconference. It's easy to figure out. We do it in all these other sports. That's all we need to do. I don't understand why the 10 seed gets a chance. Like, you look at the standings right now. Like, in the West, the Pelicans are the 10 seed, and the Mavericks, the Pelicans are 11 seed. But the Pelicans, if they would get in, but right now they're 5.5 behind the Mavericks, who are the 7. If you want a better example, San Antonio, Dusty Spurs, are a game under 500. They are 3.5 games behind the Mavericks. The Mavericks are 6 games above 500. Why should the Spurs have a chance to unseat the Mavericks out of the playoffs?
They shouldn't.
They shouldn't. They really shouldn't. And the East, it's even worse. Why should the Chicago Bulls, who are 10 games under 500, why should they have a chance to unseat the Hornets, who have a 500 record, or the Heat are above 500, knock them out? That part I don't get. I really don't. And remember what they said about the bubble play-in tournament, that as long as a team was within 2 or 3 games, but if they weren't going to have it? Mm-hmm. To me, that's why the Bulls shouldn't be allowed to do it. Like, for instance, right now, if the Heat have the better record as a 7th seed, then the Hornets are the 8, the Pacers are 9, the Bulls are 10. But the Bulls right now are 4 games behind the 9 seed, and they're actually 5 out of the 8 spot. Then the Bulls don't have it. They got to get closer. They got to get within 2 games, like they had set up in the bubble. I think it was 2 or 3 games. If they're not, they're just not allowed to play in the tournament. And so the Pacers are 1 game out of the 8. Okay, fine. Pacers, Hornets, they play each other, and the Heat are safe as a 7th seed. Because to me, if there's eight teams and the 7 and 8 are clearly, you know, multiple games ahead of the 9-10, why should the 9-10 be rewarded by having a chance to totally have a do-over?
Yeah, I talked a little bit about this the other day when you were gone. I don't like it at all. I think the biggest thing that Cuban's saying, and I agree with, is the fact that the Mavericks, if they were in the Eastern Conference, wouldn't even be in this situation.
That's
with the record that they have. They would be the number 5 seed the other day. I don't know if that's the same today as it was then.
Actually, they would be the 4 seed.
They'd be the 4, okay. And they might have been the 4 then by like a half a game too, now that I think back about it, but it was close.
Right.
And I think that's the biggest thing is that. Now, the tournament's going to be a little like the Spurs won't be able to knock the Mavericks out because the 7 and 8 are going to play for the 7 spot. Mm-hmm. So whoever wins that game will get the, I guess if the Mavericks would lose that, then the Spurs might be able to knock them out. But so the 7 will play the 8 to get the 7 spot, which I don't think should have to have happen either. Like, I'm like, 7 got the 7. They're not the last. No. They shouldn't be the 8. Like, that's just, if you want to put 8, 9, 10 against each other, have the 8 play the 9, have the 9 play the 10, and then whoever wins that 9, 10, then have them play the 8.
If they're within a
kind
few
of like
games,
what they're
if they're
do
really
anyway.
Close
yeah.
in the standings,
and if it's
I
close,
agree.
Yeah.
But
if
the Bulls
it, the
aren't
Bulls
even 10 close.
Games behind the 8 seed or anything like that, or even if they're, you know, however many games they're behind. If they're more than 5, I think more than 5 games behind anything, you shouldn't even be thinking about being able to be in the top 8 and in the tournament.
I would argue you need to be within a couple games because you have a shorter season.
I mean,
you have 72 games.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bulls right now, I mean, think about it. You may sit here and go, well, they're only 5 games out of the 8 spot. Well, their record's 22-32, 10 games under 500, and the Hornets are 500, 27-27. That's the equivalent of 5 games. That's very significant. To me, it should be a 2-game situation. Like right now, the Pacers are 1.5 games within the Heat for the 7 spot. The Pacers, if they have a play-in tournament, only game out behind the Hornets for the 8 seed. I get why the Pacers would be included in something like this. The Bulls don't deserve it.
No.
Bulls don't deserve it. I mean, the Pelicans, they're 2 games within the Spurs, but the Pelicans are 5.5 out of the 7 spot. Now, they are 3 out of the 8 spot. So maybe you justify the Pelicans, Spurs, and Warriors, you know, fighting for that 8 spot with the Grizzlies. But why should the Mavericks have to fight for it? The Mavericks are 2.5 games clear of the 8 seed.
Yeah.
And why should the Hornets are 5 games clear of the 10th team, and they're, I mean, I don't like it. You reward mediocrity is what you do.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's the case, if we're going to do it that way, then why not just allow every team in, which I don't like that at all.
Like,
but if you're going to go that far, what's the point? I mean, I think 8 teams is enough. And I know probably that somehow it does create more excitement. I get that. It's almost like they're adding extra wild cards, just like the Major League Baseball has. But the baseball has fewer baseball teams that are in the playoffs than the NBA does. NBA already has half their league in the playoffs without these play-in tournaments.
Yeah.
So, but it did create some excitement, and I got it, and I understood it. Because of the big restart and having that long layoff, your teams are going to be different and how guys are going to come back after that layoff. I understood the bubble play-in tournament. Totally made sense to me. And by the way, the Suns went undefeated and almost got themselves into the 8 spot. So that was pretty cool. But this is different, and I don't think they should have it.
No, I don't like this at all. The thing last year was just a whole different setup. Right?
Sure.
You played, what was it, 8 games that they went and played at Orlando?
Eight, I think.
Because the Suns went 8-0, I think. And
and still didn't get the spot.
Didn't get
that's
in,
how far
the
back
Spurs
they were.
Were hot, too, and the Suns were messing that up in the bubble, right? So they played 8 games just to get that 8 spot, or however many spots they were looking for. I think it was just the 8, if I remember right. Everything else was pretty well set, and those teams were just playing to get, like, some games against each other just to get themselves back acclimated to the game and get ready for the postseason. But, you know, it wasn't even a tournament, really. It was just, we're going to play 8 games. Whoever has the best record combined with what you've already done this season can get that 8 spot. And so this is not even that. It's not even close. It is. It's like a wild card, just a different way of doing it.
Yeah.
And there's no other – I don't like the one-game thing either.
No.
Like, I don't like it at all.
I've never liked Major League Baseball's one-game thing. I mean, I love the excitement of it.
Yeah.
But it's like you've erased games 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of a best-of-7. You're just moving to game 7.
Yeah.
I still think that should be a 2 out of 3 because all it takes is one dominant pitcher to win you that game. Now, it messes you up for the next series in regards to rest for that starting pitcher. It does create a lot of excitement, but it's just – like, you play 162 games. I remember, what was it, the Pirates lost, back-to-back years in the wild card? I mean, a small market team that busted their butt and did so great. And if you're in a really good division, you can win, like, 98 games and not win the division. and have a one-game winner-take-all against a team that has won 86 games, and then you lose that game, even though you get it at home, yay, you lose that game, you're done.
Yeah.
Just like that. Now, in fairness, people could sit here and go, well, what about the NCAA tournament? Everybody loves that, and that's a good point. I mean, when Kansas is 34-1, or whatever they were, going into the tournament, or Kentucky, obviously undefeated, or as this year, Gonzaga undefeated, you know, and let's say Gonzaga lost in the second round to a team like Northern Iowa, okay? Yeah, you would sit here and say, well, that's not, we just accept it. We're like, well, that's part of the tournament. That's the nature of the tournament. And it's not a best of series, but in basketball, and it is, but in baseball, they have one game, winner take all in the wild card.
Yeah.
So why don't we have this big, why don't we get, if we get riled up about, well, your whole season comes down to that one game and you're playing a team that is not nearly as good as you, but they could, you know, have a dominant pitcher, a great pitching performance, or a weird bounce of the ball, or a bad call by an umpire, and that determines your season. Well, why aren't we up in angst and all upset about how the NCAA tournament's put together? That's the same thing. It is.
Yeah, it's, and I think I on the
ask others, Virginia.
Yeah,
they lost to UMBC.
I think
you think they played a game a best of five, best of seven. Who wins that series? I know who wins that series.
Well, yeah, there's no question.
Right.
I think the on the other side of that is like what you said. I mean, this is what it is. This is what we're conditioned to. So if the NBA had an entire series or playoff that was just best of one, like just like the NCAA tournament,
right?
Then we wouldn't probably be as up in arms about it. If Major League had, you know. You get into the playoffs, it's a one-game winner-take-all for every round.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't even talk about the one-game wild card mm-hmm. because that's just what it is. And so I think that's probably the biggest difference there is, obviously, every other round has at least, in the major leagues, at least the first round is best of five and then best of seven after that. So every other round, you've got to win at least three games to advance. So I think that's just kind of what you're conditioned into and what the playoff actually is. And then all of a sudden, we've added a one-game winner-take-all here, it kind of just throws everything out of balance and out of whack. And I think that's what people get up in arms. They don't get up in arms about the NCAA tournament because, well, one, it's exciting, and two,
well,
that's what the NCAA tournament
is. The wild card's exciting with a one-game thing. If it's a one-game thing to decide who's the eighth seed is exciting as well.
Which, well, yeah.
Do
yeah,
or
yeah,
die.
Yeah.
Do
yeah.
or die is always exciting.
Yeah, it is.
So that's no different.
But I'm just saying that your condition
yeah, I get
on
that
the
point.
NCAA tournament, because that's what this is.
Right.
And we've known that since 1939, right?
Right. And people are getting conditioned to the, you know, wild cards playing a one-game
yeah, and
you
get, we're
all.
Getting used to that. I mean,
still don't think it. But here's the other problem, though, I have with baseball is that's 162
exactly.
games,
you're
a longer
just talking about
season.
A 40-game basketball season max most
right,
of the time.
Right. And granted, NFL,
if you make
you know,
it all the way,
you're a one seed, you get a first round bye, so you're guaranteed to play. I mean, you're going to play one of the six now I guess the best seven teams in your conference. So it's been watered down a little bit. But baseball, you know, added teams with the wild cards, but the NBA already has 16 of their 30 teams in this thing. Why are
yeah,
we adding? Why are we allowing four more teams? That means 67% of the NBA teams are in the play-in tournament or seeded.
Yeah,
I don't like that. That's too many. It's way too
yeah,
many.
There's things that I like way less than, like, that I'm more frustrated about than the fact that it's a one-game winner-take-all deal there once mm-hmm. you actually get into it.
Right.
It's just there's too many teams in there anyway. We've gone through the records, like Eastern Conference, 7 and 8 seats sometimes are 4 to 10 games under 500, like
right.
somewhere in between there sometimes.
And that's why you should seed the whole thing.
And so now you're going to
give
they
say,
it,
well, that, yeah. that takes away from – the conference, you know, the conferences. Well, the West is the higher conference. Why should the Mavericks be punished and have to be in the same type of tournament as the Chicago Bulls, who are eight games behind the Mavericks in the standings if they were all put together?
Yeah.
That's a fair point. But they did decide to do this.
Yeah,
and
they Cuban voted
was
on
one
it.
Of them. They voted
you
know, on it.
I mean,
so maybe
I don't
they'll
know.
Learn
I guess
from
probably
it.
Got to be more alert, I guess, and more thinking more forwardly, I guess, to what's going to happen.
You would think somebody would have thought that through,
yeah.
though, wouldn't you?
Okay. I mean, when they talked about it, I thought about it, right?
Yeah,
there's going
right.
like, to be a 10 seed that's not very good
yes.
that's going to have a chance to make the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, especially when you think, like you say, about the Eastern Conference, you know that if there's 6-7 lost team in the 8 spot some years, then this 10 team is going to have at least 10 games under 500, possibly.
You know what I would...
Yeah, let's put them in.
Here's what a rule I could...
72 instead of 82.
I could add a rule to it. You could make it, you know, like they said, within 2 or 3 games of the 8 spot, you're in a play-in tournament, or you have to be 500 or better, or mm-hmm. you don't qualify. And right now, guess what? The only problem is if you have a 7 or 8 team that are under 500, that's a flaw with that rule, I guess. But you have to, or you just take the top 8 records each conference. But if there's anybody that's trying to get into a play-in tournament, you have to be 500 or better.
Yeah.
And guess what? The Pacers aren't. The Bulls aren't. Everything's solved in the East. In the West, the Spurs aren't. They're out. And the Warriors. So the Warriors, in my scenario, the only thing you'd have is the Warriors playing the Grizzlies for the number 8 spot, because the Warriors are 500, and the Grizzlies are a half game above 500. Mm-hmm. They're only a half game difference between the two, and the Mavericks are safe. Don't have to worry about anything. Could rest some players last few games because they are in the 7th spot by 2.5 games over the Grizzlies. That'd be a way of doing it. I mean, we know we can adjust schedules on the fly. We proved that in COVID.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I've heard this. Well, you gotta reserve this place. No, you don't. The team with the better seed is going to host a home game. You don't know the playoff schedule. You don't know if your team's going to make the playoffs before the season begins. You don't know sometimes right now you don't know if your team's going to make the playoffs. Guess what? If somehow the Pelicans win 7 in a row and get into the playoffs, somehow I imagine the Pelican faithful will make arrangements very quickly to host a game in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Very quickly. So don't give me this, well, we need to know ahead of time. That's why we have these 10 teams in, because then we know for sure that a 10's going to play a 7 or the 8's going to play a 7, 9's going to play a 10, da-da-da-da. Now, the problem is if you have a TV deal that guarantees this, then you got to you gotta provide that part of the TV arrangement. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that wasn't something that was an original NBA agreement with the TV deal, obviously, because they started it last year. And you had less games on TV last year because there's less games overall. There's less regular season games this year. And I think that's what it comes back to. It comes back to finding a way to get extra games to appease to the rights holder to help them make money, and then everybody's happy. And I think that's what this is all about. Again, it comes down to the almighty dollar. It's not about what's the thing that makes the most sense.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
sell your soul to the almighty dollar, man.